The Great Cricketer is a Twitter stream. It's about playing cricket at the grade level.
It's a tough, mean, dirty, dirty business being a great cricketer.
A lot of cricketers, you know, that's all they know. They've done it since they're 10 and they have a deep-seated fear of change.
But the great cricket is all about being the most alpha version of yourself as possible, at all costs and at all times.
I don't bat or bowl. I just feel the gully, count the number of dot balls in a row, sledge 15 yards. It's made me feel better about myself.
Thanks, champ.
Oh, no, you called me champ.
Hello and welcome to the Great Cricketer Podcast. My name is Ian Higgins. I'm joined, as ever, by Dave Edwards.
Great to be with you, Higgos, and we are at the SCG.
We're at the SCG.
Ladies and gentlemen, this whole week for the third test, Australia versus Pakistan, Cricket Australia has done something they will regret forever and given us media passes. We will be absolutely making the most of them all week.
They've made a huge mistake, and boy, don't they know it yet.
It's been good, though. We've been hanging around the media centre, the Great Cricketer. We've had to unveil ourselves and meet people and actually use social skills, which we don't have.
We've had a lot of, it's you, a lot of that sort of conversations, though. We've also just looked at a lot of famous
people. Thought you'd be bigger.
Yeah, thought you'd be bigger. Geez, your hands are small. That's a weak handshake.
That's a weak handshake. Lettuce. Absolute lettuce shake.
Salad
fingers. To go with your salad here.
Dave, we've seen, I'm sure the listeners will be fascinated to know that we've seen a lot of famous people today.
Yeah, we've seen lots of famous people.
Lots of famous people.
Some of the famous people you saw?
I saw Brett Lee today. I saw Shane Warne, Michael Clarke. I saw Kerry O'Keefe. I saw Michael Slater. I saw all the greats. I saw Bill Laurie. This is just a list of people that I've seen today. I saw Dad.
Tune in for the next 20 minutes while we keep going through this. It's great radio.
Isn't it funny just that, it's just a clique, isn't it? It's all a big clique. Like the Channel 9 people sit with Channel 9. Triple M with Triple M, Fox with Fox. Like, it's all very...
We sit in the corner.
And we just sat in the corner just watching everyone tweeting. Dave, Merry Christmas. Happy Boxing Day and a Happy New Year to you. It's been a big few months for us. We took a week off last week. We didn't tell anyone about it, so sorry about that. But, you know, there's going to be a podcast every day for this Sydney Test match. So some of you will be hoping for a two-day test. Others will be hoping for a seven-day test. Me somewhere...
A timeless test. Podcasts forever. My worst nightmare,
he goes. But Dave, let's briefly recap what happened in Melbourne, because that was a surprise victory as much as anything for Australia. Cricket Australia was saying that it was a miracle victory. Mm. It felt like a cheat. Like, it felt like we cheated to that victory, because it was so obvious from like day one with all the rain that that nothing was going to happen, and Pakistan basically couldn't win. And I think everyone realised it was going to be a draw, and everyone just realised if we just like play this out till day five, 5 o'clock, we can always get a draw and get out of here. 1-0 in the series. Sydney's on a dead rubber, except Pakistan weren't told that, and they just imploded in about 15 minutes.
The whole test just had it just kept meandering along. There was a lot of rain interruptions going on and off. A lot of runs.
Yeah.
Let's not forget those. Azhar Ali, Steve Smith carving it up. That's his name, isn't it? Azhar Ali.
Yes.
Just needed to clarify that. plenty of runs, but it didn't look like 40 wickets were going to be taken. So when Pakistan did implode on the last day, it was a real shock, and I guess it kind of hangs over the spectre of today's game. With Australia furthering their dominance with Warner and Renshaw both being centurions today, has Pakistan given up?
Mate, it looked like it. Given that the two balls before Warner's 100, there was some awful misfielding going on. And it just kind of like spoke about... I mean, we spoke previously in this podcast about how Pakistan is so mercurial in there, and they're brilliant one moment and then just awful the next minute. And we are just seeing a Pakistan side who just can't get back... Who just can't wait to get back home.
They've got the yips.
Yeah. Everything about it's a bit yuck. I can't see this test match going for more than 4 days unless there's rain, Dave. And I'm banking on that because, there's a lot of content we have to get through in the meantime.
Yeah.
But as you said, Dave Warner, a blistering 100 this morning.
Didn't he? There weren't too many... Were there any sixes? I'm not even sure. And we're going to talk about this with Dirk Nannis, who's our guest this week on the podcast, about how easily Dave Warner made it look batting at the SCG against Pakistani. He just really breezed through, and 100 in a session of 78 balls is just, almost unprecedented, really.
Yeah, there's stories about how Doug Walters hit 100 in a session, in the final session of SCG.
I think Ian Chappell said that three times.
He said it three times to me this morning.
On three different mediums. Macquarie Radio, Channel 9, all his various... contractual obligations. Love you, Chapel.
But yeah, and I believe Doug Walters was three sheets to the wind as well. That's how any Doug Walters story starts and finishes. But actually see that in the flesh was quite something. And yeah, it wasn't like, I mean, he did it in about 70-odd balls, 75, 76, 77 yeah. balls or something ridiculous like that. But it wasn't like T20 blastering. Like, it wasn't hitting in the air over the top. It was all controlled. I guess you kind of have to say it wasn't great bowling, but I mean, the bloke hit 100 in the session, so it's just really good batting, isn't it?
Yeah. And then you see Renshaw, who supported Warner quite ably down the other end. He was only on about 20.
He was on three, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, three. Well, I think he might have been on about 20 when Warner brought up his 100.
That's right.
You know, that's 120 right. run partnership, you were contributing 20. But he did go on to hit his maiden Test century today, and I guess the conversation now is, has he done enough to go to India? Because Sean Marsh is going to come back into the fold. Obvious questions come up. Can you drop a bloke after 100? I haven't seen it in my lifetime in the great sphere, but Test cricket's far different to that.
Well, I've never seen anyone dropped after scoring 30, so I mean, that's a little bit different.
Drop for life.
India's a different proposition. We've spoken about this many times on the podcast. It's just different. I don't think anybody thinks that Renshaw is going to be a success in India, but he's just scored 100. Can you drop? But it's almost dropping it to save him. Like, just mate, come back in November next year, score your runs in Australia.
Take a gap year, go see the world. It's going to be the best thing for your career.
Whilst we just sell Sean Marsh down the river, so end his career. Yeah. Dave, Dirk Nanas coming up.
This summer, we've got the biggest renovation challenge yet. Two teams will have to transform not one, but two broken down grade cricket dressing rooms every single week. There will be tension.
What even is grade cricket, Dazza? Why do we take time off work to do this?
Come on, Charlesy. Work hard, love.
There will be drama.
I just want to make this perfect. Grade cricket deserves a great home.
But when the reveal comes, there will be joy.
Oh, God. Lads, boys, look at this, right? Results.
Ever since the missus booted me out and took the kids, I've been sleeping in this dressing room. It's a second home to me, literally. So this is really special.
For us to be able to come in and give these grade cricketers a beautiful new dressing room, one they can drink their beers in, sing the club song, judge each other in the showers. Yeah, you know, it makes you feel good.
But this ain't no charity. Not when the stakes are this high.
I'm not here for a bloody holiday. If I wanted that, I would have gone to Bali or Thailand.
It's Australia's toughest renovation competition. Winner takes all.
If I have to dish out a little bit of chin music, I will.
Presented by Australia's favourite knockabout blue-collared larrikin millionaire.
We're giving great cricket the reno makeover it deserves.
Reno Rampage. Coming
soon. Well, here goes this week, or today, the first episode of our five-part series at the SCG.
Yeah.
We've got a professional cricketer who's played for two countries, Australia and the Netherlands. First time we've ever had a guy play for two countries on the podcast.
First time.
Probably the last time. Yeah. I don't have any other blokes we know who do that.
No.
Zero. But Dirk Nanas, welcome to the Great Cricketer Podcast.
I cannot express how excited I am to be here.
Very kind of you to say we feel equal to that.
I mean, the tone in your voice screams excitement, and all our listeners will be greatly encouraged to see your name next to adorning this podcast. Dirk, we ask every guest this, but what is your relation to grade cricket to kick off this little interview here?
I was always telling the guys that I played with in the first class setup that I was always the first person to put my hand up to play grade cricket, but my injury history would suggest otherwise. I missed one game once because I had a swollen testicle, and it was something that no one could really say, well, show us your nut. So it was kind of something that you just
Pat Farhart's not there, you know.
I mean, it was a legitimate injury. It wasn't an injury. It wasn't like a blow or anything like that.
I played with a number of guys who actually would have been keen to show me the injury. I mean, and they often did, even though they just had like a calf strain or something.
Just during the team song. Naked. Always fully naked.
But as a bowler, you never really played too much, but
yeah.
Played a lot of time in the thirds and the twos, grade cricket.
What's the difference between threes and twos, did you find, socially, in grade cricket?
Threes only played a couple of games, but it was all the youngsters.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Twos, you get the one, and you get the experienced second 11 captain, the guy who maybe not quite... so much not quite good enough or not committed enough to play the ones is because he's got the wife or
the perfect amount of good and not good enough keeps you playing great cricket
second grade
spot on and then the twos are the people who are still keen to get up and play ones.
So let's go through your career. I mean, so you started, what was the first grade team that you played for and what grade were you picked in?
I was picked in the threes. I played at Hawthorn Waverley.
Mm-hmm.
I would have been mid-20s, I reckon, something like that.
And where had you played before? You must have been playing cricket before then.
Yeah, but I'd never really played much because I was a skier.
Okay.
I would nick off in the middle of the summertime to go skiing overseas and do that competitively, and I had a business that I did that with.
Really?
So my first full cricket season was my first year that I played ones of grade cricket because the captain of my grade side, Peter Roach, said, if you hang around here for a season, you'll probably play for Victoria. And I thought, maybe I should try and do that. So I was just married, I think, and I sent my wife overseas to run our business for the season while I played cricket. And later that year I played my first representative game, which was the second 11, and it was Glenn McGrath's comeback game after he rolled his ankle in the Ashes, which was six, I think, that season. My first representative game that I played for Victoria. So, I think that was my first ever... first 11 season playing for a great cricket club.
So we're just playing a lot of backyard cricket. How did you just go from being a skier to suddenly playing professional cricket in your mid-20s? It's quite a leap.
It was 29 when I played my first Shield game, which was that year.
Right.
I don't know. During school, I was horrible. I'd play seconds and thirds all through school until my final year, and then I played in the first. We won the flag, but after that I went away and didn't really play much cricket at all.
But, I mean, you were known as a guy who could bowl 150. Mm. So were you just... I mean, I don't know.
Dave, there's a common theme here, Dave. Every guy we speak to is just like, oh, yeah, I just tried doing this. And then 3 weeks later I played international cricket.
Yeah.
You know, like Brad Hogg played as a batsman initially, and then he just decided to bowl some leg spin, then just, you know...
But how did no one, tap you on the shoulder and go, mate, you can bowl 150 kilometres an
I'm
hour
scared
with a cricket ball?
Why did no one say that?
I mean, forget Whistler. Let's concentrate on cricket.
Because I didn't bowl fast. And I didn't care, really.
Were you bowling right arm at the time?
Yeah. I bowled junk little orthodox. Maybe I was doing those.
Yeah,
I don't know. It's inexplicable, really. I can't sit there and say, I was busy doing this, because I don't have a great memory.
Did you know you were fast at bowling?
Mm. I always bowled really fast at school with a tennis ball. Mm.
Yeah.
But it was something that I never actually did it with a cricket ball. I'd just kind of roll in and try and hit a length rather than try and bowl flat out fast. Mm. And it wasn't until sort of mid to late 20s that I actually came out and bowled quick.
I remember the first time I saw you bowl live was actually in the UK, and it was in the 2009 or 2010 T20 World Cup in England. You were playing for the Netherlands.
I was.
And the game was against...
England.
England. It was against England, yeah. And I watched that game, and the keeper... What was the keeper's name?
You're on Smith.
Yes.
And
Smith.
He was standing...
He was standing behind the 30-yard circle. It's the fastest...
Oh, was he?
It's the fastest I've ever seen anyone bowl. And I've watched Brett Lee bowl. Watched Dave bowl me in the backyard with a gaffer tape on a tennis ball. And that was legitimately frightening. So I'm terrified thinking about being a third-grade batsman and Dirk D'Nannes comes into bowl off the long run in his first grade game. That must have been terrifying.
It was...
But I was watching your side on, so it's always a little bit quicker.
Well, that game, no one actually realised I got smashed in that game. My figures for Netherlands, I think, were 1 for 90 or something off two games.
Okay.
I got whacked everywhere.
Mm.
Still the best game I've been involved in.
Yeah.
That Australia... Oh, that Netherlands-England game. That was fantastic.
Well, we've got a few English listeners, and they'll be pleased that I brought that up, because just to rub some salt in the wounds, Netherlands actually won that game with a dramatic run out in the final ball.
They had six chances to get a run out in that last time.
Stuart Broad missed the stumps from about 3 inches.
Yep.
What were your memories of that? There was a pitch invasion as well. You ran on the field.
They're white hot.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You must remember it quite well. I mean, it's one of your favourite games. Can you set us up for the final ball and final scenario? What was the situation of the game?
No, can't. I just remember the generals. The whole team was sitting down on the boundary line. Mm. I was up with Ryan Tenderscarter up in the rooms. Mm-hmm. And we were just sitting there thinking, when is the rot going to set in? Because we were chasing, and we had no chance of winning this game. Mm. And we just kept coming in the ball. The edges found a gap, and the arsey swipes were somehow hitting the middle and going over the fence. Mm. And it was just extraordinary. And then we got close, and you thought, well, could we? And then that final over came. I can't remember how many we needed off the final over, but I'm pretty sure out of the six balls, I think there were five genuine chances, runouts, courts, everything like that, and they managed to stuff every one of them. And we got home on the final ball, and I think it was an overthrow. I think Broad threw it at the stumps. No one backed up.
Yeah,
could have been
right.
A draw.
That's
no one backed up. Ball went, and they scampered through for a second, and we all charged on. And then that night, we all went to Maida Vale in this hotel bar, which was a decent size, but you could not get in there. The Dutch ambassador had come with a big orange, bright orange floppy. Yeah. It was fantastic.
Yeah,
and the funny thing that night was that people were worried. The people who I was playing with, they just all had normal jobs. So they had we had a Burger King guy, we had a
clockmaker.
Didn't surprisingly. Insurance guy, we had a debt collector.
Yeah.
The deck collector at one stage got found. He was selling tickets to the game. Like, you get given complimentary prices.
And in the warm-up game,
one of the warm-up games, we were playing before India-Pakistan.
Mm. Yeah.
And so they sold out the Oval.
In 4 minutes,
For this warm-up game. Mm. We were playing before them, and so we got some complimentary tickets.
Right.
The debt collector guy gave all the tickets that none of our team wanted, because of course Holland, no one plays cricket, so everyone you find it hard to get rid of four tickets. Yeah, 4 tickets ahead, you're never going to get rid of them.
Yeah.
So he pawned them off to his old man, and the old man went on the street and was scalping tickets. He was scalping them, and it says in big headlines, you know, on the ticket, complimentary Dutch team.
He's doing 20 years now, that bloke.
Yeah. But anyway, back to the story. They were all really worried because they were going to lose their job, because it meant hanging around for longer. If we had a decent result against Pakistan in our next game, we would have had to stay for an extra 2 weeks and go into the group stage, or whatever the next stage is of the tournament.
Yeah. Right.
They would have needed 2 more weeks off work, and these guys would all...
Right.
Or worried they were going to lose their jobs out of it.
So we uncovered a match-fixing ring. Is that what we've done here on the podcast?
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
Why are you sweating, Dirk?
Is this the general vibe of these conversations? Am I sort of...
Pretty hard-hitting. And, pretty serious tone. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, I mean, playing in the Dutch side, that must have been quite a... I mean, you're in that scenario, you and Tenderscarter were almost the overseas players for your national side. It must have been quite strange... being in that environment, like having guys who weren't really sure if they wanted to win because they might lose their jobs if they had to say that's quite a strange thing to actually relate to.
Yeah, it was that whole experience was pretty unusual.
Mm. And you were living there?
No, I was still
for a period of time. We were living out of a hotel, and
people think that I played a career with Holland. I played 2 games.
Right.
That was it. It was that World Cup, and that was it. I played a couple of warm-up games, those 2 games, and then that finished. So my only experience, I'd never even played in Holland, so my only experience of Dutch cricket was that small 2-week window of playing.
Did you get a good insight into the health of cricket in Holland? And what is that?
Difficult to get a good
tough
insight.
Market. Yeah. Tough market. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, how did that call-up come about? Were you aware that you were qualified to play for the Dutch?
They'd sort of sent a couple of emails here and there.
Club president on the email. Reply all, yeah.
And how did it come about? Oh, I think they knew that I was playing in Holland, in England, on my Dutch passport.
Okay.
Because I was playing... for Middlesex in 2008 on a Dutch passport, and so they got in touch with me through that.
Okay.
And Australia picked a 30-man squad, and I wasn't going to be part of it. And so I think I'd come off like 2 years or 3 years of being the leading wicket taker in the 2020 comp or thereabouts. I don't know.
Or something.
I don't know the stats.
What were your exact figures?
To two decimal points.
To two decimal points, yeah.
Well, every team's got one of those. I've got no idea. Yeah, and what was I talking about?
The problem with prostitution in Amsterdam.
I can't even remember what we're talking about. What was what's in the middle of the story?
How to play for Holland?
Yeah,
So 30-man squad, right.
Yeah.
Australia didn't pick me. I thought, well, they're never ever going to pick me.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm in the prime of my cricketing life and they're not picking me now, so I may as well go and play. I want to play international cricket, so I went and played for Holland and then.
So the
month later, I played for Australia.
When you got that email to say, was it like, would you play for Holland? Was it a question, or was it saying we have selected you?
Would you like to?
Would you like to? Yeah, okay. And then, as you say, a year later, then you caught up to the Australian side. I mean, there must have been very different experiences.
It was a month. You said a month.
Oh, sorry, a month. Yeah, a month.
So did they just see you in performing on the international level, and they kind of went, "This guy's Australian."
He's quick. The keeper's outside the 30-wing circle.
Yeah.
I think then because they got pummeled in that World Cup.
Yeah.
They kind of went, right, we actually have to start taking this T20 game a little bit more seriously rather than just pick the one day team. Yeah. I think that was when they went, right,
let's get a skier.
Yeah. Let's throw what we've done in the past, gone.
I saw this like a whistler last month. Yeah, he was hooping it. Yeah.
He's got a big ass.
I mean, T20 cricket for you, that's obviously where most of our listeners, most of the viewing public would know your sort of know your history. I mean, are you a little bit regretful that you didn't start cricket a little bit earlier to sort of, or that T20 came along later in your life? Would you have preferred to have played more T20 cricket is the question that I'm trying to ask you.
More T20 cricket?
Yeah, would you like to have played even more? Like, would you?
I don't think that was possible.
No.
200 and something games. I don't think it was even possible to be able to play more than that. Because if I would have played more earlier, then I probably would have had to retire earlier because my body would have given way.
Hmm.
I would have liked to. There's a part of you that thinks, oh, maybe if I played cricket earlier, I might have played Test cricket.
Sure.
That's the one thing I haven't done.
Yeah.
That I, when I was good, I reckon I was certainly good enough to play. But I was probably too late by the time I was doing that. Bowling well enough to be able to do it, because starting at 29 when I first started, and what I probably played my first T20 game in when I was 30 or 31,
mm-hmm.
I didn't know anything about the game. So Captain Cam White would stand at mid off and throw me the cricket ball and tell me what to bowl, because I had no idea what to do.
Yeah,
it's just Dirk, hit his stumps. Dirk, hit his stumps again. Dirk, hit him in the head. And he would just throw me the ball every time, tell me what to try and bowl.
Yeah.
And so I wasn't thinking my way through overs. It was the captain telling me what to bowl. So it was kind of an automatic response, and I learned my cricket sort of that way. So by the time I got good and worked out my game, I was sort of 33, 34. And
incredible story.
Mm. I mean, that's amazing. I mean, do you still have lots of aches and pains? Because bowling fast, it looks, especially in slow motion, just looks really bad for your body.
I can't stand still at a bar for a long time.
Okay.
I have to sit on a bar stool.
Yeah, right.
But surprisingly, that's one of the only times I feel anything.
Okay.
That's when I'm standing still for too long.
Yeah.
I can still do manual labour and stuff like that.
Okay.
Stuff at the farm, and I enjoy doing all that. Knees in my last year start getting a bit dodgy, but I think that's just lack of strength.
Hmm.
I'm about to go skiing next week, so I need to make sure that I'm got a bit of strength in my legs. I felt that this morning walking upstairs, so that's something I need to go and do.
Is that still your number one passion, skiing ahead of cricket?
Oh, yeah. Cricket was...
You hate it?
I always enjoyed playing it as a kid, but it wasn't something that I dreamt of doing.
Yeah. Yeah.
You'd sit there watching Test cricket and I thought that was so foreign to me as a dream to do, because I was always in the thirds or the seconds or whatever. It was just so foreign.
Yeah.
Skiing, I wasn't the best, but I was always okay. You know, towards the top of the heap,
right.
And so you kind of think, oh, this is something that I can logically see a progression to me being good at this, but I never had that with cricket.
See, it's the problem. We were always just dreaming of playing for Australia and never played for Australia.
Well, I was always much better than Dirk Nanners at the same age.
Yeah.
That was my problem.
We've actually got your son, Max, in the room.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
He looks suitably bored.
In the corner.
Well, he's had to listen to his dad talk about his career, which I'm sure he's stoked about.
He's a bit of a cricketer himself.
he enjoys his cricket. He probably wishes his dad bowled and batted more with him in the backyard. But he's a bowler predominantly. I'd like him to be a bit more of a batsman, but he chooses to bat down the order a lot of the time. Yeah. When asked to open, he says, no, I'd like to bat 11.
Yep.
Which I'd like to see a bit different. I always thought that I was a bad batsman because I didn't get enough opportunity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so when someone asks you to open, you should open. Mm. But, it's yeah, like you can bowl. Yeah,
it's conscription.
Yeah, it's conscription, yeah.
He'll be all right.
So obviously your next dream is to go to the Winter Olympics as a professional skier. That's obviously your next dream. But you have moved into, I'm just telling you what your dreams are now.
Yeah.
But you have moved into the commentary position, to the commentary box, mm-hmm. and that's in that sort of realm now. Are you enjoying that over at the ABC?
I do.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not sure whether people have sort of caught on to the bluff that I'm giving at the moment that I actually know a lot about the game. I think I've described enough here that people should realise I don't actually know too much.
Did you try and bring an outsider's perspective to the commentary box?
I think so. Sometimes I'm probably a bit guilty of digressing a bit too much away from the game, but I don't know, that's okay. Isn't that what cricket commentary is about sometimes? I don't know. But I'm a bit different because I don't think of the game as tactically as the other guys. I'm being a bowler, I'm a bit different.
Just hit the stumps.
Not as selfish as the rest of them. Just
Well, let's quickly talk about this series. I mean, it's been a strange series off the back of what was a bit of a shock defeat, I think, for the Australian public against South Africa. Mm. Now this series, 2-0 up to Australia. Warners has hit 100 in about 45 minutes. It's been an odd series. Would you agree with that?
An odd series. I don't think it's been unpredictable,
right?
In what we've seen, mm-hmm. I think.
Were you surprised at how the second test panned out in the last day?
That's a tough one. If you look at history, you would say no. If you were there on the morning and looked at the state of the wicket and the state of how tired people were, and the Australian bowlers having bowled the first three days of the Test match and then having to bowl the side out on the last day, you probably would have thought, surely they can't do this because there's nothing in the wicket. Then you'd be surprised. But, yeah, it's... Pakistan just have a way of losing games in a session or two. They did that in Brisbane and then they did that in the last Test. I don't think they're a terrible side. I mean, they're bowling... has holes. I think their third seamers, well, the way they've rotated their third seamer shows that they've got no idea who their third best seamer is.
But what's the solution for them? I mean, in a nutshell.
Find someone who bowls 150k in swinging Yorkers at about the 20 over mark.
Yeah, he'd be good.
Yeah. Maybe find him on the slopes in Whistler.
Yeah. Moving forward, Dirk, Australia in India coming up. How do you see that panning out? Dave and I have got our own views. We've expressed numerous times this podcast, but I mean, how do you see that series panning out for Australia?
Well, yeah, that is as hard as it comes, I would have thought. I think in the likes of Pete Hanscom, I think he's shown here against Yasser Shah that he can actually play a spinning ball pretty well. So I think he's a good addition. It'll be interesting to see what happens with Renshaw, whether they take him. I don't think he's looked as good against spin. Do you take him along, or do you keep going with it? They spoke a little while ago about horses for courses. He's a guy that's grown up at the Gabba and hasn't shown that he can play spin. I mean, he's been okay so far, but it's not like he's an absolute freak.
Yeah.
Does he make way for Sean Marsh? And he's out here at the moment batting beautifully, but does that mean he's the right guy for India against the spinning ball? I don't know. And then that all-rounder position, I don't know. But it's a long...
Do we need it? Must Australia have an all-rounder?
You need someone to take some overs off the others.
Yeah.
You need somebody. I think the MCG showed that. I think the Gabba showed that when Pakistan got close. I thought on day three in Melbourne, it showed that they were getting far too many overs under their belt. You need somebody, whether it's a Glenn Maxwell who just bowls 10 overs for every ball.
Yeah.
You know, so the others share 70 between them. I don't know.
I mean,
I think there just has to be someone they can throw the ball to. Doesn't necessarily need to bowl 20 overs, but
needs to bowl a few.
I mean, you've played a lot of cricket with Glenn Maxwell. Is he the right guy? I mean, he's probably Australia's most mercurial number six available. He can change the game much the way in Dave Warner's probably won the Test match for Australia in the first session.
He's not setting the world on fire at the moment.
No.
But he's made runs in India. He is a handy offie, although, you know, in an offie you've got Lyon as well, but you know, it doesn't hurt to have an extra bowler in the side. He knows Indian conditions and... Yeah, he has that ability to play that mercurial innings. So, in the absence of someone else, why not? It's not like you're picking a dud.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be rude not to speak about the biggest news of the day, Dave Warner's century in a session. That was quite something, and you would have had the best seat in the house from the press box there.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
It was pretty good, yeah.
Yeah, I was talking about my seat. Yeah,
seat's okay. I was actually a bit upset because we were so straight down the wicket that we were right behind the umpire, and you couldn't see what would happen to the ball because we were. The batsman, when he would play in front of his body,
right,
couldn't see what happened.
Shielded, right,
so it was almost too good a seat.
Too good a seat.
Always something to whinge about.
Keep that in mind when you're in Bay 13 next time. Yeah. Dirk Nanners has too good a seat from the press box.
It's, Dave Warner, that was special. The good thing I enjoyed about that was that he didn't come out and just bludgeon the ball. He actually played cricket shots. And a lot of them you'd find in a textbook. It was just beautiful batting and... balls that others would leave, he managed to hit for four, and that's the sign of how good a player he is. And guy's absolute star quality.
Well, Dirk, we'll wrap it up now because we know you've got to get back to ABC grandstand duties, but thank you very much for your time and hope you enjoy your time on the slopes next week.
Yeah. Sure, I will. Thanks for having me.
And thanks to Max as well.
Got it, Max. Work hard.
I'm generally away during the winter, so I have the entire summer to spend at home watching cartoons with the kids. And I really love my OLED TV. Like, really, really love it. One of the things I look forward to most when I come home is actually to be able to sit down on the couch in front of my OLED TV and just say the word OLED repeatedly. I really like saying the word OLED. I'd never heard it before, this paid commercial. But I enjoy the way it rolls off my tongue, like some kind of exotic Spanish word. OLED, OLED, OLED. It drives my wife nuts, but the kids love it. And
LG OLED TV. OLED. You'll hear it 1,000 times this summer. So go on, try saying it 1,000 times too.
Dave, it's that time of the week, that time of the day, hashtag AskTGC. We've said it before, we're going to be floating around the ground, hopefully meeting some of you very nice people out there. We're from the internet, and so are you in our eyes. Get us on the Facebook machine, get us on the Twitter machine using the hashtag AskTGC. Dave, we're opening up this week, this day, with an apology.
Yeah, here goes. Strangely, our first apology on the podcast. We've offended a lot of people and a lot of groups so far on our merry way. Yeah. But this one goes out to Greg Curtis and the boys from Sandgate Redcliffe DCC,
right,
who we incorrectly described as a park club in the podcast.
Shocking
before
accusation.
Christmas. Do you remember what the scenario was?
I recall it being a situation where a chap had written in where he kept saying that should I be dropping in that I got the fourth grade, fourth wicket, highest partnership in the history of the grades club. And it was like about 130 or something like that. And I was surprised that that was the record for that club in grade cricket. And it didn't sound like grade cricket to me. So we said, that sounds like some park shit. But it's not. We were wrong.
No, so we've been informed that the Gators, as they're known as, are actually one of the 12 Brisbane test grade clubs. So on the podcast, we obviously talk a lot about Sydney test cricket, being from Sydney.
Yeah.
But we don't know much about the other states. And for that, you know, it's our ignorance. It's on us. It's incumbent. But we do apologise. To Greg and all you lads out there at the Gators, you are a grade club and you will always be a grade club until you're relegated.
Can I just say that this is now my favourite team, the Gators, and I am going to be checking my cricket every week to see if that fourth grade team has broken the fourth wicket partnership, because you can't have a fourth wicket record partnership that's been there for 20 years or whatever it was that's 130.
No.
You can't have that.
It's just a bad middle order, isn't
it? It's a bad middle order. Always has been for decades, apparently.
We should also just mention, you know, in, also along with this apology, the first grade T20 state final for the Gators is at home at Trevor Hone Oval on January 22nd, and they are reportedly planning a massive circuit.
Massive circuit. Get round the Gators.
Get round the Gators. He goes, let's go on with usual programming.
Okay, this one comes from Andrew Johns on the Facebook machine.
Andrew Johns.
It's not the Andrew Johns, although the Facebook... No, it's not him. he writes and he says, I have a question for you. I'd love for you to ask one of your quality guests for their take on it. Unfortunately, with Mr. Dirk, he had to race back to you know, do his actual job.
Yeah.
And he didn't want to talk to us anymore. So it's going to be down to us. I hope that's okay, Andrew. So he writes and he says, about 15 years ago, I was playing for an intercity rep game against a team from another regional New South Wales city. Following me taking possibly the greatest catch of the century at first slip to dismiss one of their opening batsmen, their number three swaggered out to bat, and there was something different about him. Unlike all of his teammates, he wasn't wearing the same team shirt as the rest. This balding gent in his early 30s with a beer belly had squeezed into his faded and threadbare New South Wales under 14 rep shirt. He copped a gobful from most of our blokes, even our nice ones, for being a wanker. Sure, be proud that you've represented your state, but Jesus, it's been 20 years, son. Let it go. Wanker. I'd love to hear your thoughts. How many years is too many in such circumstances?
Right.
Dave.
Well, I don't think the number of years that have passed is as paramount as the fact that it's under 14 state cricket. I don't think anything under 15 should be talked about. Is it just me, or is under 14 a little too young to be rocking state kit when you're 34?
Okay, so my big takeaway is, I mean, how good is this bloke's rig as a 34-year-old that he's wearing the same clothes as he was when he was 14? That's, I mean, that's phenomenal. What's his secret?
And he's balding. We don't need to know that. That happens to the best of us. It's hereditary, mostly.
I like the part of this story from Andrew that he wrote in that, he had, I mean, the question's not about him, but he's introduced himself to this by saying that he took the greatest catch of the century.
Arrogant.
So arrogant from Andrew. The point, the answer is, how many years is too many years?
As I said, a million years. Doesn't matter, it's just as long as it's under 15 plus.
Dinosaurs. Next question.
We're going on Twitter here. This is from Peter Richards. He says, great cricketer, I noticed there is a Milo Champ squad. Referring to the juniors that come onto the professional grounds at lunch.
Yeah.
Is hazing small children a new strategy from Cricket Australia to unearth future talent? And with Milo having a champ squad, does this mean a collective of champs is a squad? So we'll answer part one first. What's he goes, is hazing small children a new strategy from CA to unearth future talent?
I don't think it's a new strategy. I think it's always existed, wouldn't you? I mean, you know, I mean, cricket, I mean...
It used to be Milo, have a go, which is also a form of champing. Have a go, mate.
Have a go, you mark, etc. Yeah, it's I mean, it's not a new strategy, no. I think it's bold. It's bold marketing that they've decided to take our word that we've, you know, changed the conversation with. Are you champ? Champ will be champ.
Yeah, no royalties.
And Milo, a sponsor of the show, have gone with the champing of the kids. Mm. Champing of the kids. Am I for that? I'm for that. I'm for champing of the kids.
And for the second part of Peter's question. With Milo having a champ squad, does this mean a collective of champs? The collective noun for champs is a squad.
Is a squad. No, I don't think it is. What's a collection? No, because like if you're going out in the circuit with your squad, I mean that's using a different parlance.
Mm.
So I'm not sure if that can cross
noun for champ. Championship?
Championship, I think. Championship. Collective.
A championship of champs. Speaking of champ, Dan Hughes asks, great cricketer, how many times do you reckon Warner has muttered the word champ this morning?
He was seeing them so well that he could actually sledge whilst batting. I'm usually not big on the sledging whilst batting because unless you're a first grader playing fourth grade, it's really fraught with danger.
It's dangerous.
But Warner basically did score 100 today against a fourth grade attack. I mean, that was Pakistan's mentality today was fourth grade. Their fielding was fourth grade. Their bowling wasn't much better.
Yeah.
The batting facilities were test cricket. Dave Warner was seeing them huge. He could throw around champs as much as you want.
Have you had to put a number on it?
37.
Good from you. Well, that's about all time we have. Here goes short but a furious podcast today. We'll be doing one throughout, one per day,
one
throughout the entire SCG test, as long as it goes. Tomorrow we've got a couple of very special guests. We won't let you know them yet. We need to confirm them. But safe to say it should be a cracking podcast.
Also, Sam's back. We didn't caveat that Sam's not here. Sam's not here today. He's in
Melbourne
at the moment. Sam was a guy who used to be on this podcast.
That's brutal.
That's championshipping him. But Sam will be back. He's flying in. He's going to be here for the remainder of the senior test match. We look forward to having him, because without him, we are nobody.
Yeah, we're right.
As shown in the press box today.
The full champ squad will be on deck tomorrow. See you then.